I visited the doctor yesterday. He said, you probably ought to lose a few pounds. You got a meniscus tear in your left knee, and if you lost a little bit of weight, it'd certainly help it out. You may have something like that as a problem, or maybe you just want to look better in those spring and summer clothes, or maybe you just made a commitment to being healthier. A lot of us now are getting more active, and with all the new techniques and fads we hear about, it can be tricky to know what's a worthwhile addition to our workout and what's just good, too good to be true. Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have Ann Swartz with us from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, UW-Milwaukee, as co-director of UWM's Physical Activity and Health Research Lab. She has a lot of useful information on how to assess different fitness programs. She's in our Milwaukee studios today, and thank you for spending time with us. Appreciate it very much.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be here.
Well, really, really glad to have you along. It seems like whatever magazine you pick up or the TV show on health you watch, there are new theories about what kind of exercise is, you know, sort of the magic bullet for fitness and especially for weight loss. In your mind, what are some good tips for assessing those and knowing if they're really good for us?
Well, you really have to take a look at what the new fad is and whether it's something that, first of all, you're going to enjoy. That's one of the things that I always say is that you have to enjoy the exercise that you're participating in. Otherwise, you're not going to necessarily stick with it. And then it's always good to talk with an exercise professional a little bit about these different fads and trends and find out if that's something that's going to be a good option for you in your current state of health and with the schedule that you have in your day-to-day life. And so one of those fads that has been coming up over and over recently has been high-intensity interval training.
Oh, you hear a lot about that.
Right, yes. And it's interesting. Some people will call it high-intensity interval training or HIIT. Some people will call it high-intensity intermittent exercise. Some people call it sprint interval training. There's a lot of names for it, but it's really just an enhanced form of interval training. It's an exercise strategy where we alternate short periods of intense anaerobic exercise with recovery periods where we may do real low-intensity exercise or maybe moderate-intensity exercise. And this has really become popular because for some reason they've picked up on a study from 2006 that really highlighted the time efficiency benefit of this exercise, and I think that's really why it's become so popular lately.
It is kind of interesting. My knee is screwed up now, so I can't do much of anything. I screwed it up on a 10K run in a park, and I wish I never would have done it. Anyway, I can't do it. My wife, though, just ran a half marathon, and it was kind of interesting because she said she was running it. There was a couple that was doing the interval, so she would she would go by them while they were kind of walking, and then a little later they would go sprinting by her,
right,
and then she just kind of kept her normal pace, and they wound up at about the same spot at the end or at about the same time, but they were doing the two different ways.
Right. Well. Congratulations on completing the half marathon. That's a huge accomplishment. And I'm sorry to hear about your knee. That's too bad.
Yeah.
So a little bit. I can tell you a little bit about high intensity interval training, just for those folks who are listening who may not necessarily be familiar with what it is.
Okay.
Usually, the reason why it's so popular is because the sessions can vary from as little as 4 minutes to somewhere around 30 minutes. So if you think about it, if you don't have a lot of time in your day and you hear, oh, you can gain as the similar benefits to running or endurance training in just 10 minutes, this is something that will spark your curiosity. Generally, these intervals of sprint and recovery periods can be as short as 6 seconds or maybe as long as 4 minutes. But the sprint portion is really an intense activity. It's usually something that is at about at a minimum of 90% of your maximum capacity. And some studies have evaluated this at up to levels of 250% of your maximal capacity. So really, really intense exercise. And then the recovery periods are generally something that is a light to moderate intensity activity. So maybe walking or a light jog or something like that. So there's been a lot of discussion about the proposed benefits of high intensity training. And these are most of the benefits that have been examined in the scientific literature are really based on skeletal muscle changes. They've looked at a lot of what's happening in the skeletal muscle and found that with this type of training, we have a better ability to use fat for fuel within our muscles. We have more efficient use of the fuel that we do use. We have improved ability to regulate our blood glucose, which is something that's very important. And then something that's also been very interesting is that we've seen improvements in total body fat. And most people who are interested in exercise for weight loss, you know, this really sparks their interest as well. So, but there are some drawbacks.
Awfully good. What about the drawbacks?
Right. Well, you know, you have to consider that these sprint intervals that you're doing are very hard. They're very intense. And you're doing it at your maximal level or pushing yourself beyond that maximal aerobic capacity. And so it's very important that if you're thinking about engaging in some high-intensity interval training, that you speak with your physician or speak with an exercise professional to ensure that you're healthy enough to engage in this activity. What you don't want to do is you don't want to engage in some form of activity and then end up hurting yourself, because then that'll prevent you from continuing to be active. And so so you really need to make sure that you're healthy enough to engage in this activity. And then there hasn't been a lot of research that's looked into potential injuries from this type of exercise, whether it's looking at the prevalence of muscle strains or things like that. We just haven't had a lot of research that's been published on that. And so just know that if you're thinking about engaging in this type of activity, that there are some considerations for you to take before you start engaging in this activity.
And it sounds like it's not walk for a while, then do a little slow trot, and then walk for a while.
Right.
It's all out.
It is. Yes. It's, you know, you might be able to walk for 30 seconds, but then it's an all-out sprint for 30 seconds. And so it's really something that you definitely need to prepare for. You want to have a good level of fitness before you start doing this type of activity.
You know, the weather is close to cooperating, and actually is. A lot of us are looking forward to moving our exercises outdoors. Are there still good reasons to go to the gym or to fitness classes?
Well, you know, there definitely are. There are a lot of people who do enjoy exercising outside. I'm one of those. I love being outside and in the fresh air. But there are a lot of people who really like using the equipment at the gym, because that equipment can provide them with feedback, such as how many miles they've been running or the exact pace that they're going at. And so it can really help individuals plan and execute very purposeful exercise programs. And then as well, a lot of the group exercise classes are great, because you're there with friends or colleagues or maybe people who you don't know but can provide some social support for you while you're doing the activity. And some people find exercising with other people is just a lot more fun. And so there's a lot of good reasons to, you know, still be inside. There's some things that you can't necessarily do outside. If you like using weight machines, those generally you have to go to a gym or some sort of facility that's usually inside to be able to use those.
I kind of enjoy that part of it, too, you know, because you do the aerobic, and then in the gym, you've got all these different machines that you can kind of use – that you obviously you're not going to have them at home, and well, right. most people. So it's nice to have access to those. RC in Milwaukee had a question. Hi, RC.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just had a question. I'm pretty big into you know, interval training and doing a lot of CrossFit and stuff like that. And I've been trying to I'm pretty lean as it is, but I'm trying to cut down and gain more strength and kind of lose the body fat that I do have. But I kind of heard, you know, you have to take in X amount of protein. I'm kind of on a no-carb diet, pretty much only vegetables and real high-end protein. Is it true that you kind of have to, you should be taking in about 1 gram of protein per 1 pound of body weight?
That's a good question, RC. And I'm gonna put the caveat on here that I'm not a nutritionist, but there are general guidelines that you should follow. And if you're an active individual, then those it has been stated that about 1 gram of protein should be taken in. But in terms of decreasing your body fat and increasing your strength, it sounds like you're engaging in some of the activities that you already should be, and you're also pairing that with a nutritional program. And so you're doing the right things, and it may just involve tweaking those just a little bit in order to make sure that you attain the goal that you want. And so it may be that you engage in a little bit more resistance training and a little bit maybe tweaking the type of resistance training, so lifting, you know, heavier weights and less repetitions, and that may help you get closer to that goal.
Hmm. Yeah, that could make some sense. Ann Swartz, our guest today, PhD and associate professor and director of MS Kinesiology program in the Department of Kinesiology at the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee. And she will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us. There are some people who seem to have no trouble putting on those workout clothes and getting out the door to exercise before the sun is even up. And then there's the rest of us. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Finding the right combination of fitness activity to both get us to our goals and to keep us motivated, that's a difficult kind of task. But there are a lot of great reasons to do it for a mind, for a body, for a spirit. Ann Swartz, PhD, is an associate professor and director of MS Kinesiology program at the Department of Kinesiology in the UW-Milwaukee. She's also the co-director of the Physical Activity and Health Research Lab at UW-Milwaukee. And she joins us today from our Milwaukee studios. And always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoy it very much.
You can join in with your questions or comments for her. Do you work out a lot? Do you change it up? How do you motivate yourself? Are you getting bored? What do you do to spice it up? And what kinds of benefits maybe have you seen from your training and exercise? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And Bob in Oconomowoc's been waiting a little bit here, so let's go to Bob. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask Ann, Dr. Swartz, what she thinks about interval training at high intensity and the sport of swimming.
Good morning, or good afternoon, Bob. Thanks for your call. That's a good question. We've been talking a little bit about the benefits of high interval training, and a lot of swim training does involve interval training to enhance the performance during different events for swimming. And so I think swimming is a great way or a great mode of exercise to apply this idea of high intensity interval training. You can very easily do some sprints and then float a little bit or slow down your strokes a little bit to have your rest or your recovery intervals. And it's nice in a pool, too, because you have a very defined length within the pool where you can do your sprints. You can either do one length or do two lengths for a sprint, and then you can recover the same distance or maybe slightly more or slightly less. So it's a really nice option, I think, for both enhancing your performance in swimming, but then also gaining all the health benefits that we've been talking about that come along with high-intensity interval training.
Mm-hmm.
Could I just say...
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I think that if Dr. Swartz is who I think she is, I'd just like to say that she did a wonderful job in the early 90s at Waukesha North, and thank you very much.
Yes, that was me.
Well, now, what kind of a job were you doing at...
I don't know. I was in high school.
Oh, well, maybe that was one of your high school buddies from back then.
It could be. I'm turning, you can't see, but I'm turning red here.
I can tell. I can feel the heat from your cheeks. Oh, well, if you went to high school with Ann Swartz, or if you have another question for her, or a comment about motivating yourself or getting going with exercising, or a question about the kinds of exercising you do, give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And with a nod to our friends and all of our listeners in northern Wisconsin, who many of whom are, if they're listening, they're probably listening on a transistor radio because the power's out in many parts of the state. Probably not a lot of exercising being done in the far north, at least outside on this day.
It's a good time to get in those that last cross-country bit of cross-country skiing or maybe snowshoeing. So there's always opportunities to get in exercise.
You know, it's one of those times of like shoveling. Okay, that's good exercise, but... You know, there are times you've just had it with shoveling, and I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm giving up for the season. I did that the last snowfall we had in southern Wisconsin. I refuse. I am not going to shovel one shovelful, and I didn't. Right. And then a few days it went away. Karen in Jefferson, your turn. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Well, I thank you for the program. But, you know, whenever there's an exercise program, and I'd really be interested to think about what Dr. Swartz thinks about this, but I knew my grandma. Now, she died when she was 99 and not too long ago. And I knew her ever since she was like 58 or 59. She did not move. I mean, she had a little bit of arthritis, but she'd go from the kitchen table, maybe have my uncle or somebody do the dishes or something like that, and then she'd move from the TV. Once in a while, she'd walk around the house, but basically, she sat and moved from one chair to another chair for 40 years, and she was sharp till she was 97 years old. She did do some betting on the horses, and then people would tease her. They'd say, "Oma, who do you think's going to win the Kentucky Derby?" And she would give them a complete analysis in her 90s. I mean, you know, say a friend of a friend that came over. My uncle had a lot of friends. And she'd give them a complete analysis about who, you know, what she thought about the Kentucky Derby. So her brain wasn't bad either till she was 97. And all she did was just, like I say, for 40 years, move from one chair to the other, and occasionally she'd take just a little walk to the garden 3 feet outside, maybe do some, you know, snapping of beans at the table. She would do things, but they'd always be in a sitting position in the kitchen till it was time to watch a show in another room, and she would move over there. And that's it for exercise, and she lived till she was 99. So I'm wondering...
She's lucky. She had the lucky genes.
I think of her, and that doesn't motivate me to exercise, truthfully. I mean, I need it. I know I need it. But I'm just saying, is it really, really, really necessary?
Well, that's a really good question. And you hear stories such as that of your grandma, Karen, from many, many people. And then they come with the same question. And it's interesting because you think about health and there's a lot of different things that contribute to your health. Exercise does contribute to your health, and we know the benefits of exercise. Diet is very important for your health. Keeping your mind active, that's also very important. But genetics is also a very strong component. And so it sounds like like your grandmother has just a really great genetic predisposition to being healthy. And hopefully, Karen, you have inherited that genetic predisposition. But, you know, we do know for most of us that exercise does benefit us. It makes our heart stronger. It makes our muscles stronger. And so then activities that we want to do are going to be easier on a day-to-day basis.
Also, and so she was a little overweight. I'm a little overweight. She was eating fresh vegetables, but she was eating a lot of carbs. She would have kuchen in, for breakfast or oatmeal. Mm-hmm. Then she mm-hmm. would have kuchen for a snack. Then she would have jelly bread and whatever. And then eating a bigger supper. Which is, that's the other thing. Everybody says, well, eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and then supper like a pauper. I mean, she broke that rule, too.
Right. And I think she's a good reminder to all of us that, there are these general guidelines that we put out there that, for instance, with exercise, that individuals should accumulate 30 minutes of moderate intensity activity on most, if not all, days of the week. Well, for some folks, that's the perfect amount. Yeah. For others, maybe they don't need that much. And for others, maybe they need more to gain the health benefits. And so it sounds like with your grandma that, she reminds us that, those general eating guidelines that for most people are what produce health benefits, because maybe your grandmother had a great genetic predisposition. She didn't necessarily need to follow those. So
there you go, Karen.
So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, I hope you're in the same boat. It would be good. But tell you what, even if you are in the same boat, I think exercise, usually you feel better afterwards. I mean, even if it's not going to make you live a minute longer, for the most part, people tend to feel better afterwards. And if you're in a situation where you do have to do a little work or a little running or a little bit of whatever, you're going to feel a lot better doing that, too. So,
that's right.
Pat in Chicago, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I missed the tail end of the conversation about the intermittent or intensity training. Is there something that would be kind of equivalent to that type of exercise that would benefit someone that wouldn't be, would be, I guess, a longer workout, so to speak?
Right. Well, one of the reasons why people are so interested in the high-intensity intermittent exercise is because it can be so compact, and it's very time-efficient, and that's one of the reasons why people are so interested in it. But now saying that, most of the studies that have evaluated high-intensity the intermittent training have compared the outcomes, the physiological outcomes, to that of endurance training and have found similar benefits. And so if it's that you're interested in going out at a more moderate pace and going for a little bit longer time, you're going to receive very similar benefits to those benefits that we've been talking about with the HIIT training or the high intensity interval training.
Okay.
Did that answer your question, Pat?
It did, yeah, and I'm sorry, you probably mentioned that, but I just kind of missed the tail end of that, so thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much. It doesn't hurt to repeat that, because that's kind of a key point. Emily in South Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Emily.
Hi. My question is, I just started doing some interval training with my running. I've been doing, 1 minute of running combined with 2 minutes of walking, so I have a couple questions regarding that. The first one is, how could I best use that to increase my running speed? And the second one is, how should I combine that then with just going on a regular jog?
So as many runners are interested in increasing their speed, and there's a lot of different types of runs that you can engage in. And interval training is one of those types of runs. But in general, runners engage in different types of runs for different benefits. And so if you go out for a long, slow run, what you're basically doing is you're trying to increase or improve your capacity for running that longer duration. And as you start to get up into interval training, the interval training and then some other sprint type activities, those are really to try and increase your VO2 max or your cardiorespiratory fitness level, as well as increase your lactate threshold, which is really a marker of anaerobic performance. And so there's a lot of different types of runs that you can engage in. Now, to increase speed, there's a lot of work that you can be doing with turning over of your feet and keeping track of how many strides you're making per distance. So there's some work that you can do with that to try and work on your speed. But in general, a lot of benefits from exercise really rely on this principle of overload. And so we have to stress our body beyond that which we're comfortable in order to see some benefits. And so if it's speed work that you want to work on, then you want to work on those shorter sprints. And a minute is a good distance to go, or a good time amount to go. Some people use distance in order to work on their speed training. But there are a lot of good books out there as well that you can use as a reference.
Do you recommend one?
Sure, yeah. There's one by an author who is a great coach and a great exercise physiologist. His name is Jack Daniels, and he's got his book is called The Running Formula. And it goes through and it really outlines very nicely the basic four types of runs that you want to have and that you want to engage in, and how often you want to do your long, slow distance runs, your interval training, and things like that. So that might be a good guide for you, Emily.
All right.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Emily, sure, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to, we've got other callers online here, and here's a great comment to share, I think, from Bill. Just heard you say that the people in northern Wisconsin wouldn't get much exercise. I just got an email from the Birkebeiner Foundation saying that they've gotten 14 inches of snow overnight. They sent a video of the groomer doing the bike trail today, May 2nd, 2013. Oh, man.
That's great.
Oh, love it. Are you a cross-country skier at all, Ed? Do you ever get out?
I do. I love cross-country skiing. It's something that I started doing. My mom got me into it when I was really young, and it's a great form of exercise. And there's just something about being out in the middle of the woods when it's snowing and it's really peaceful and you're working up a good sweat. It's one of my favorite forms of exercise.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We really enjoy it as well. Connie in Williams Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Got a question for your guest.
Okay.
Often you hear about the benefits of wearing a pedometer and getting 10,000 steps per day, or that should be generally a goal for people to get 10,000 steps per day. What I've often wondered is, does that... do those 10,000 steps have to be high-intensity steps, or can you confer the same type of benefits just by accumulation of activity per day?
Thank you, Connie. That's a great question. Wearing a pedometer is a wonderful resource because it provides you with that immediate feedback, and it gives you a sense of how much you've done and how much more you should do. And having that 10,000 step goal gives you something to work towards. There's been a lot of research that's looked at the value in this recommendation. And what we found is that simply accumulating 10,000 steps, whether it's through just the incidental activity of parking your car and walking into the store or taking the stairs instead of the elevator, all of those things, if you accumulate 10,000 steps, which is equivalent of about 5 miles, then you're going to receive health benefits. And those health benefits, those documented health benefits, are an improvement in your blood pressure, an improvement in your blood glucose level, an improvement in your insulin sensitivity. And so, and also there's been some indication that it's a beneficial for maintenance of weight loss. And so you don't have to do that activity at a high intensity in order to receive the benefits. Now, the more activity you do, the more benefits you're going to get. And so if you're already accumulating 10,000 steps per day and you've been doing that for a month or so, then maybe you might want to think about adding in a little bit of formal exercise where you do increase your the intensity of the activity, and your heart starts pumping a little bit faster, and you start breathing a little bit heavier, because then you're going to increase the benefit that you've already gained. You're going to see that much more benefit in your blood pressure and that much more benefit in your blood sugar levels. But the 10,000 step recommendation is a great recommendation. I wear a pedometer on most days, and I try really hard to make sure that I get those 10,000 steps on most days.
You know, it's really interesting. One of the things about a pedometer, it shows you, wow, if you drive to work and drive home and you're in the office, I mean, you look at your pedometer at the end of the day, you might be sitting on a very 2,000 steps or 3,000 steps, you know? So
right,
it can tell you the other way, too.
Right, and that's not uncommon. You know, many people have very sedentary occupations. I'm one of those individuals. You know, we go to work and we sit at our desk and get up to go get a drink of water from the bubbler, or, you know, go warm up our food in the microwave, and then we go and we sit back down at our desk. And so it's not uncommon to really, at the end of the day, look at your pedometer and say, well, golly, I just didn't do too much today. But then that's also an incentive, you know, because if you can get up once an hour and, you know, walk a couple hundred steps or 500 steps, then, you know, that'll add up throughout the day. And by the end of the day, you know, you'll look at your pedometer and you'll go, wow, look at this. I really did a great job today. So, and give yourself a pat on the back.
Absolutely. Well, Connie, thanks again.
Thanks much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Dick in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Dick.
Good morning. Maybe you answered this question earlier. I just tuned in a little bit ago. But anyway, I'm 66 years old. I live a pretty active lifestyle. I cut firewood. I do a lot of that kind of stuff. I can tell that as I'm getting older, my body is slowing down, and I'm not staying in as good a condition as I'd like to stay in. Is there some kind of an exercise program that would be good to keep back strength up? You know, and just, again, arm strength and things like that, I can tell is just kind of disappearing with time.
Yeah.
And I guess, is there a source of what, you know, program, or what should be done?
That's a great question, Dick. You remind me very much of my father, because every time I get together with my father, he seems to want to cut firewood. And so then I get wrangled into cutting firewood with him. And that can be quite vigorous, you know, lifting up those heavy pieces of wood. And whether you're using a chainsaw or an axe or you have a splitter, whatever it happens to be, that can be quite vigorous activity. And so, you know, it sounds like you're wanting to maintain your strength to do the activities that you do on a daily basis. And so it might be of interest to you to start looking into some sort of resistance training program. So I'm not sure in Wausau of the resources, but, you know, whether there's like a community center that you can go to. And usually at community centers, they'll have some sort of fitness professional there who can help guide you on some activities to strengthen and maintain the strength that you have in your upper body and your back, because those are, and then as well as your legs, you know, because when you're lifting those big pieces of wood, you really want to be using your legs to lift the bulk of the weight. And so get yourself to
one of those centers.
Right, right. And then, you know, they can show you some activities that you can do in your own home so that you don't necessarily have to always go back to the center, unless that's something that you choose to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But
and there we are out of time.
Oh,
but that's a good place to stop, actually. And because I Nick's got the idea, get yourself to a center and get some help there. And Ann, you'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Absolutely, I would love to.
All right. Ann Swartz from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, our guest. She does a wonderful job, doesn't she? We'll have her back. We'll do it again. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.